Hello, you goobers. My name is Sean Evans, and this is a podcast where we talk just to talk. A podcast that consists of random conversations, interviews with friends, and personal experiences. If you're new to the Goobs podcast, welcome. This is a safe place, a place where we dive deep and ask questions. On another note, I wanted to give a huge and most deserving shout out to my sponsor, Orgain. Clean nutrition with the highest quality ingredients. Plant-based products for you vegans, vegetarians out there, or perhaps your digestive system is exhausted with trying to break down dairy like me. Lactose Intolerant Squad Unite. Use my code TEAMSHAWN to get 10% off when you check out. A lot has happened since we last spoke, and I wanted to take some time and give details of my recent life experience, especially for you listeners out there. If you can finish a Goobs podcast from start to finish, guess what? You're a goober. I didn't make the rules, but you're in. I don't know you, but you're in. This isn't a cult, just so you know. Anyway, I just want to say thank you to Rode Microphones for sending me a hat. To be honest, I'm really, really picky when it comes to hats. This is a pretty cool one, and I'll be wearing it. So thank you for looking out. I've used their microphones many times before, and I highly recommend them to anyone who's looking for great quality audio. Anyway, today I have some really awesome guests. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. My name is Joseph. I'm 21, and I'm an English major in MDC College, currently living out here in St. Augustine because coronavirus took everybody's jobs, and there's nothing better to do with your life but hustle.
You said it best. So you're going to school. What are you going to school for?
English Lit. I was originally a bio major for 3 years hard, and it was a grueling time. Like, anyone who's thought about or wants to study bio, study that shit. Mm-hmm. But be ready for, like, the most stress-induced years of your life. Where if you have a background in science, like, if you learned it in high school, you're lucky. Luckily, sadly enough, I didn't have that ability. I didn't care in high school. I was a party animal. And even so, if I was a party animal, we didn't go through chemistry. We didn't go through basic, we went through basic biology, but nothing deep enough to help me in college. College is all about teaching yourself. You got to use your resources.
Self-education.
Yeah, your teacher's just going to tell you what to read, but it's up to you to actually indulge, ingest, and learn that stuff. I've had to learn the periodic table better than I know how to spell my own name.
So you're from Cuba, right?
I'm from Jersey, but my whole family's from Cuba.
How long have you been in the States?
Since I was born. I was born in Jersey. Mm-hmm. I left when I was 5, came to Miami when I was 6, 5 actually, lived there for 16 years, came here 4 weeks ago.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, how about you?
Well, I just moved. Some of you guys already know. But if you listen to the last podcast, you're probably thinking, you know, what could possibly happen in 3 weeks? But it's been a minute since I did a podcast. Last time we spoke, I spoke about my trip to Austin, my trip to Savannah, met some good people, tried new things, like I said. But I had to take some time because this whole transition between moving 30 miles away from my home, it's not far, but the transition itself, it's been somewhat of a challenge, you know? And the reason why it's been such a challenge is because I'm living with my biological father. And if you've listened to the podcast, I've been talking about him since the virus hit and up until very recently, the very beginning of the virus when it hit, we weren't really a part of each other's lives. You know, so, you know, he decided to part ways with his partner. He said, you know, it's time for us to get a place together so we can catch up. And so that's what we've been doing. You know, so that's why I haven't really been doing a podcast. It's been kind of strange. I wanted to do a podcast, but I just didn't really feel like I could explain myself properly, you know. But here we are. And, you know, the last podcast was a solo session, and that's been a challenge, trying to talk to yourself.
Yeah.
You ever do that? I mean, we all talk to ourselves, you know, but try to hold a conversation for an hour. It's very strange, and people look at you funny, you know, funny when you're recording in your car, you know, they're like, hey, what's up?
I don't have schizophrenia. You got schizophrenia. Yeah. I ain't no voices here. This is a podcast, bro, I swear.
Yeah, but, you know, the other night, you and I, we met at this job. We work at it's an upscale Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, something like that.
And really cool people. It's a private establishment. It's not a chain. And everyone there seems really genuine.
especially the food, which is something that's important to me.
The food is authentic. You know, one of the managers asked me, she said, what kind of tequilas do you know? And I said, yeah, I don't really drink all that much, but you know, I know a few. And she's like, well, what do you know? I said, oh, Jose Cuervo? She's like, no, that's trash. And so that kind of set the tone, you know? I knew then that this place is the real deal. Some real shit.
Some real good tequila.
Some real shit. But, you know, working at this restaurant and using Spanish, it's kind of cool. It brings me back to when I lived in Costa Rica. You know, I had friends who spoke English, but it just brings me back to that time. You know, since you're from Cuba, do you still have friends in Cuba? You do?
I actually do, yeah. Whenever I went to visit, largely, I don't have friends per se. It's just cousins that we know we're family, but we all treat each other like best friends. In a sense, if anyone understands what that means, like, I never met him in my life until, like, I was in eighth grade and my dad was like, all right, yo, we out to Cuba. And since then, and 26 trips later, I know everyone there and everyone knows me. Like, I walk down my dad's hometown, there's not a single soul who's going to be like, hey, what's up, Critoita? They call me by my dad's nickname, you know, and it's like...
What's his nickname?
Critoita.
What does that mean?
It's like little Critoa, because his name's Cristobal.
Oh,
in Spanish, you pronounce it Critoa, and the little one, you'd be Critoita. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember my first time going to a club over there. It was in Huapas, which is my dad's hometown. No one knows where that is because it's a little spot on the map. You got there when the dirt goes from black to red because of all the clay and all the iron in the dirt. Yeah. So I went to a little club there named the Casa de Agua, the House of Water. And it was basically a club fitted with sprinkler systems that went off at random times. So they would just douse you with water as you're dancing.
That's kind of cool.
It is. It was a fantastic. And mind you, this is a very poor country. So like the quality of which the building was made, not exactly the best, but the quality of the fun you had,
yeah,
probably the best you've had in your life.
Wow.
And like the people there in Huapas are probably some of the most genuine people I've ever met in my entire life. All the doors are wide open. If I leave my house to go to Havana, the capital, for a few days, I'll ask my neighbor, hey, yo, you could watch my house for me. If anything, you can help yourself to whatever's in my fridge. They'll do it without a question. They'll just be like, yeah, sure, bro. And you know what? 99.9% of the time, they won't even take your food. They don't care.
See, it used to be like that. I lived in Georgia, in the middle of nowhere. And I'm not saying don't go to Georgia, but don't go to Georgia. You know, I was living in Georgia, a small town called Hayira. And it was one of those places where if you ran out of sugar or you needed like one egg, you could just, you know, go over to the neighbor and be like, hey, could I have an egg or, you know, a handful of sugar? And sure enough, you know, they'd hook it up.
Yeah.
But because of you and your origins, being from Cuba, and I know you guys are from all around the world, and coming to America, like the perspective and the cultural changes.
But
like,
I was born
what did you
here,
first? Sean. Yeah, I know. But, you know, your family. You
the
get
cultural
to see
shock
that.
Came when I went to Cuba.
Yeah.
The first time, that was a shock. To see, like, the best way to explain it, because I'm in the troves of writing a novel, and it's related to Cuba and how it's different there. How you go to, you land in Jose Martin Airport. You see all these nice cars picking people up. As soon as you leave that airport, you see shit cakes because of the horse-driven carriages that people still use. You see a horse that looks more like bone than actual horse because it's so malnourished. Or like cars. The cars that you saw that were so nice, as soon as it gets three people in there, they're all hanging from the windows because the AC doesn't work. And the back seat's a sofa that someone got from his house and installed into his car. The cultural shock to me was how sad it is that a country that claims to be better than the best country, well, not the best country, but one of the good countries like America, can't do anything to help their people. In Cuba, if you're on the government's good side, they send you a little packet of rice, a little packet of fruits, and a bottle of rum and some money.
Kind of like welfare.
Sort of, yeah.
Interesting. They just recently opened the gates, right? Like past 10 years for import?
Oh, for import, yeah. But because of the corona thing, they closed everything down. They recently just opened up businesses. Before, like, your liquor stores would be selling you sandwiches. Because of the corona stuff, no one was selling anything but food. Like, clothing stores were selling food, as I was heard.
Really?
But, like, Now they're finally opening things up. You can finally go out. Shitty thing is, can't go out with a mask. And the other shitty part is, a new law was recently passed in Cuba. You're not allowed to record the police officers. If you record the police officers, you can face a hefty fine. And that's the thing, Cuba's communist, so recording your cop or not, after you go to court and you take it to a lawyer, the lawyer's just going to chuckle because there's not much he can do for you. You're in trouble in a dictatorship. That's the thing, in a Dominican Republic, in Brazil, or in Argentina, the people are what you should be afraid of, as well as the police. But even so, the police are afraid of the people in those countries because they know that the people there are willing to duke it out with them and shoot them out. In Cuba, to hear of someone shooting it out with the police is unheard of.
Oh, definitely.
You in Cuba, no one dares defy the government. To defy the government in Cuba is to put your whole family on the line because they will fuck you. And if it might not be killing you, it might just making your life so bad you wish they killed you. It's pretty bad.
Well, you know, traveling there and having people from Cuba, what would you like to see for Cuba? And because of how people are in Cuba, I feel like people from different countries seem to be like really well-rounded. You meet someone who's been all around, you can just have a conversation that essentially never really ends.
Oh, that's the thing. Cuba gives you opportunities if your opportunities aren't aimed towards La Yuma, United States. My best friend's uncle, he became a translator. He got sent to Dubai. He is now a Dubai citizen, and he can do whatever he wants.
Within reason.
Within reason.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
My actual cousin tried to leave to go to Africa, to go from Africa to America. They wouldn't let him. The African government would not let him leave to go to America because the Cuban passport tells them that they can't let him do that. They contact the Cuban embassy. The Cuban embassy tells them that he can't go to America.
Would you recommend anybody to go visit Cuba? Cuba?
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to go.
I think everyone and their mama should go to Cuba because everyone thinks that Cuba's shitty or that the people there are shady or criminals because of Scarface or because of some bullshit social idea that people have fed them from this country.
Yeah.
The people there make it work with what they got. There's tractors completely built from scratch. Completely built from scratch that will probably outbeat any John Deere you put next to it. You know? There's cars there that people literally built from pieces of cars they found around. The people there are not like the people here. I learned that while being there for so long. People there party this night and only think of this night. An American goes and parties this night, he's still thinking about the bills he's got to pay at the end of the month. Or the shit that he's got to do
tomorrow. What do you mean by that? Could you elaborate?
The Cuban, or more or less a lot of people, mainly in Cuba, the Cubans, myself included, we prioritize what is happening right now over everything. If I got 50 bucks
in my pocket.
Like
living in the
moment. Yeah. If I got 50 bucks in my pocket and that bottle costs 20 bucks, and that shirt costs 20 bucks, and that shit costs 10 bucks, whatever it may be, I'll pay for it while still knowing that I got bills to pay later. But don't worry about it. I'll find a way to find a job somewhere to get that money to pay for those bills. But it's all about living in the now.
It's all about now.
Sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes it'll bite you in the ass before you can even get up.
It sounds like it's kind of like a way of balancing. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to spend all your money in one night and live in the moment and not care. But there also, obviously, there's a piece of you that knows that you still got to get some stuff done, you know.
Of course, I'm not saying that that Cubans are irresponsible in the slightest. I mean,
right.
I've lived there for 3 months, 4 months of my life. Hardest working people I've ever met in my life. Mind you, a jackhammer. You know what a jackhammer is. Everyone knows what a jackhammer is.
The tool.
It's the tool that everyone sees in the TV, on the cartoon of the dude with the earmuffs, through the sidewalk.
Yeah.
In Cuba, they ain't got that. They got a car axle and a piece of a pickaxe head welded to one end, and then you just kind of hefty that bastard and just start bashing into stuff.
Damn.
And that's how you break through walls. And that's another thing. The houses in Cuba are not built of sheetrock like the cheap houses here in America. they're built out of cement. Pure fucking cement. Meaning when I had to break open my roof, I had a jackhammer over my head because we brought a real one from America to there. And I had that shit over my head, jackhammering the roof to break the roof. I had a piece of rock fall on me 100 times over.
Damn. So you mentioned you were writing a book. What is this book about? Fiction, nonfiction?
It's something like, if anyone's ever read, sort of like Hunter S. Thompson's own work, where it's sort of like, it's not fictional, but it's fictional in the way. Best way I can word that is, actually, you know what? Not like Hunter, much more like Kurt Vonnegut's Cat's Cradle, where Cat's Cradle's going on during the Big Red Scare, fresh out, World War II had just ended.
Completely clueless, just so you know.
All right, Kurt Vonnegut.
Super ignorant.
Cat's Cradle is about a journalist who travels, not travels, but he goes to America. He goes and tries to track down the family of this father, the father of the atom bomb. He created the atom bomb, Frank Hohenicker, and he has 3 children. I forgot one of them, but you got Newt Hohenicker and a girl. I forgot her name as well. I think it's Anna. And the 3 of them have another weapon that he made called Ice 9. Ice 9 supposedly freezes all water that it comes into contact with, meaning it will freeze over the entire world if it were to be dropped anywhere on the world and not treated right.
What is this going to be used for? Do we know?
It's not true. This is all fictional.
Oh, okay.
The only part that's true is Frank Hohenicker really did help with the development of the atomic bomb. So then, throughout the book, he goes on to an island that doesn't exist called San Lorenzo, and to track down Frank Hohenicker. And the whole time, he's also explaining, like, the way the world is and how it's fucked up and how it is also beautiful. And that is sort of how my book is. It is not fictional, but it is not nonfiction. It's sort of, it's about a journalist, surprising enough, who gets hired to write about the hotels that this man owns in Cuba. He goes with this man. This main character's name is Timothy. And he also has a drug problem. Well, one would call it a drug problem. Another one would call it a drug edge. Meaning his drugs give him the existential edge that he needs to basically do all his things. It doesn't slow him down. It helps him. Like, immensely. And so he's in Cuba. And he's there and he makes friends with Marco Fernandez, which is a person working under the same character's boss. The two of them are, one's a photographer, the other one's a journalist. Marco has full experience in Cuba. He knows Cuba inside and out. He knows all the bad things and all the good things. And there's very little good things. So as he goes through, Timothy's green. He does not know dick about Cuba. He doesn't know how bad it is. He doesn't know anything. He's going because he's got to pay for his drugs and his bills. That's all he cares about, and his booze. So he goes and he starts, like, experiencing Cuba and asking Marco all these questions, like, how come these people dress this way in Gucci clothing and Versace pants and whatever clothing they dress in? And you can tell them it's because here in Cuba, they spend their money on how they look. That's all they care about here. They care about flexing. That is the mentality of the younger Cuban society.
Is it still a thing?
Yes.
Really?
You go through Cuba, you go to Cuba, you will find someone with a nice car, nice clothes, nice watch,
but living
nice
in a shack.
Living in a shack.
I mean, you see that here too.
With the newest iPhone that came out. Oh, of course, I've evicted people who were checking their bank statements on the iPhone 10. But they couldn't make a $700 monthly payment for their rent, for their children. Get the fuck out of here.
Damn. That's rough.
But he learns of Cuba, and at the same time, he's also comparing it to America. Because for years and years, America has always said they're better than Cuba. And Cuba has always said they're better than America. When in reality, they're both the same type of shitheads. They both commit atrocities against their citizens, just in different forms.
I mean, we could get into that all day. I mean, we got some conspiracy theories around there.
But that's zero conspiracies. This is all... Yeah. How America treats, like, Native Americans and immigrants to how Cuba just treats their daily citizens like
appreciate
shit.
Appreciate that, by the way.
Huh?
Appreciate that, by the way.
Got you, homie.
Shout out to you Native Americans out there. Dying species, unfortunately. Well, you know, the other night, you and I, we got off work, and you said, let's get a beer. If this place is open, sure enough, it was. And I guess we had about an hour to
shout
just
out
chill.
To Barley's.
Shout out to Barley's.
For good beer and decent french fries.
Decent french fries indeed. But you pulled out your journal and you were talking about your experience towards
narcotics.
And the reason why I'm bringing it up is because I don't want to put you on blast. I want to hear your life experience, and maybe if there's someone out there who's dealing with that sort of thing, maybe you have some word of advice on, you know, how you got through it and overcame it.
Well, see, I myself, if anyone knows who Hunter S. Thompson is, I idolized that man. Before I even knew what he was, I lived the life of Hunter S. Thompson, where it was, life isn't about arriving to a location well-preserved and perfectly intact. It's about coming down the road, skidding, well torn all up, used to all fucking hell, and just screaming from the top of your lungs, yo, yeah. What the hell of a ride.
Yeah.
Life is, to me, death isn't, I'll get there when I'm 85. If I get there when I'm 36 and I lived one hell of a life,
yeah,
it was, you know what, time. That death was worth it.
Yeah.
And so at a young age, I was like, I'll be honest, I was 14 when I tried marijuana for the first time.
Right. I think I was like 15 when I smoked my first joint.
It was a bowl. It was on Sunny Isles Beach.
Where's that?
It's down in Miami.
Okay.
Jesus Christ, I remember that like it was yesterday.
Me too. I felt bad because my buddy, there's a piece of paper in the back of a Bible, and it's a blank sheet.
Oh man, but I'm an atheist. Like,
I feel like we're gonna go to hell if we do this. And he's like, no, just rip it out, man. It's good rolling paper. And sure enough, you know, one thing led to another.
Let me give a word of advice for anyone out there who still hasn't done that. I mean, I'm an atheist. I'll do it for fun. Just don't do it, though, because it's so bad for your lungs.
Yeah.
That paper's bleached. That paper's got ink. That paper is not rolling.
Definitely
paper.
Lost some brain cells that night. Yep.
Or just fucked your lungs up to all hell.
Yeah. But, you know, marijuana is becoming more of a... It's beginning to be normalized.
It was the tits back in the 20s. In the 20s, your car ran on it. Your clothes were made out of it. Your paper that you were writing your notes on were made out of it. Everything revolved around marijuana. When the big major oil companies that weren't in the cannabis business and the food companies and the clothing company found this out and realized they were losing money, they kind of banded together like a trio of dickheads and presented to Congress. They changed the name of marijuana to cannabis, mm-hmm. I think, or the other way around. They had changed the name of marijuana so that Congress would not understand what they were really signing, and they signed away the bill to illegalize marijuana. This was shortly after two things. One, a black man, this is the 20s, everybody, so you have to understand.
The Prohibition Act was 20 to the 30s.
Exactly. He was drunk on moonshine, mm-hmm. first of all. Second of all, he took a puff of a joint, and supposedly, this is supposedly because, back to the reason why marijuana is illegal, when they allowed white women to smoke it, they craved black men. And again, in the 20s,
that
this was not socially accepted, so they, it was one of the driving forces to make it illegal. They claim that this black man raped a white woman.
But I think I heard about this.
There was never any evidence pointing to the fact.
Yeah, there are news articles about it.
There was never any evidence pointing to it. There was the woman herself, I think, didn't even claim to have been raped. It was all about her getting, they got walked in on by people who were white. And so that, and then the release of the movie Reefer Madness, which presented marijuana as a horrible drug where you smoke it, you become psychotic. When you're off it, you become suicidal. Those two things, along with the delivery of that bill to Congress, was the three things that made marijuana illegal today. And so that's what I find funny when I hear old heads saying that you shouldn't smoke it because it's bad for you. No, it's not. And all the studies that you're telling me about how it makes you lose brain cells, they had chimps strapped to masks and funneling them smoke. You do that with anything, you're gonna lose brain cells because your brain, you're not getting oxygen.
Right.
You're just breathing in carbon monoxide that is carrying THC with it. Mm-hmm. Big whoop, you got high, but now you're retarded. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just...
I mean, it's very strange because here in the United States, we already know that Canada legalized marijuana for it to be recreational. You can smoke marijuana in Canada. Colorado is recreational, I believe. Washington and California decriminalized magic mushrooms.
Yeah.
And they're using them as substitutes for antidepressants.
Yeah.
And we're only about, I don't even know, let's say 2,000 miles away. You know, it just doesn't make sense. It's
and
like,
here in Florida, you get locked up for that shit.
It's ridiculous, man. I mean, I know they were getting letting people out of jail because it was a marijuana charge. I just hope things change for the better good. But there are also studies that indicate that if you smoke marijuana, it may lead you to do hardcore drugs.
It does.
I don't really, I mean, people with addictive personalities.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
If you're addicted to drugs or addictive in any way, smoking weed will lead you to things. But recent studies have proven that they are actually thinking of giving weed to people in rehab centers to get them off of drugs, which is a big thing.
Drug is a man-made product, right?
Huh?
Drug is a man-made product.
Well, no, because the word drug and the many different dialects it came in, it's been around since the beginning. You know, magic mushrooms were considered a drug. They were natural. Marijuana was considered a drug. It's natural. Opium was considered a drug. It's natural. Heroin is somewhat of a natural drug as well. What we fail to understand is that there is also the thing as man-made drugs, like you said, and that we should find a way to cut that line and then relabel those other things that aren't man-made. Medicines, perhaps. But even so, man-made drugs are good for you. LSD, for instance, is probably one of the best drugs anyone could ever take in their life.
See, I think I spoke about this. I microdosed LSD last year, and it was on July 3rd. And I was with this girl at the time, and she ended up going to what seemed to be psychosis. Very, very scary stuff. Because, you know, one thing led to another. She had a bad trip, had to go to the doctor. They, you know, scanned her brain to see if she had any neurological damage. She didn't. And she felt depersonalized and all that stuff. So, I mean, there are such things as bad trips, and, you know, I don't really know too much about it because I haven't done it. That's why I wanted to get your feedback on, well, you know, everything that you've done.
I've done acid for a long time.
Yeah.
Even though I'm only 21 years old, I've been doing acid for 3 years. And this, all right, for instance, this quarantine alone has been 3 months long, correct, Sean?
Yeah.
I bought 10 tabs of acid and now I'm all out.
10 tabs. Okay.
And every other day it was 1.5, 2, 3, shit like that. I take large amounts of acid. I've come to the point of taking so much acid in such a short span of time, 3 years, that when I took acid a month ago, I take it a lot by myself. A lot of the times I take acid by myself. This time, I was having a very good trip, and I enjoyed the trip. But before I had taken the acid, I told myself, I was like, I don't want to have a good trip. I want to commit ego death, where you feel yourself dying. And I was like, well, I've been doing drugs for so long, I might be able to just do this on command. So I meditated to a certain song that I play, and I meditated. Upon meditation, I began to think of horrible things. And when doing so, it enabled a bad trip. That bad trip was so bad that I felt like something was coming out of the side of my body. I got up without second thought, walked up to my desk, grabbed my knife, and pressed it to my side about to just disembowel myself. I stopped, looked at the knife. It had not even broken skin, luckily enough. I was like, you know what? It's just the acid, Joseph. Calm the fuck down. I went back in bed. I began meditating longer. And I learned that I was able to pull myself out and into bad trips at will.
Right.
And this was something that shocked me. I was like,
strong mind. Who knows?
It could be a strong mind. Or it could be that my mind itself is so used to acid that it has finally accumulated the power to control the acid. With that being said, I don't have control of what I trip about. I just have a trip about, I just have the control of changing whether it's good or bad. But I'll tell everybody, good or bad, an acid trip will always teach you something.
You know, when I was with this girl and we had to go to the doctor every week for the 3 weeks after that. And it was like, you know, 1 week would pass and she's like, I don't feel like myself. I feel depersonalized. I'm nauseous. I don't feel like I'm here. And so, you know, we're talking to this doctor and he's saying, you know, a lot of you know, these people do acid in Silicon Valley. And that's where it came from.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to do it for science, you know, because I was genuinely curious. So many of these you know, inspirations, the people that I, you know, kind of look up to, they, you know, they did acid and it kind of changed their perspective for the better good. But I think if I were ever to try to do a, you know, a hallucinogen, I would like to do like a psilocybin mushroom, something that's from the earth, maybe, you know?
Mushrooms are fun. They fuck up your stomach.
Yeah, that's why I hear. Everybody says that. Have you heard of ayahuasca?
Yes, and I've always wanted to try ayahuasca.
All right, all right. What do you know about it? Have you heard any of the stories?
It is, to get ayahuasca is extremely hard. Very hard.
I mean, they do it like you can't, on retreats.
Yeah, you can't. In the native retreats, you can get to it. But I think, I'm not going to say this with a fact, but I'm going to say this thinking so. I think that it's within the Native American police rights to either arrest you or shoot you for taking ayahuasca from their retreats. Hmm. I think they're allowed to either arrest you or just upfront shoot you. But I know that it is extremely illegal to take it from a native reserve.
It's DMT, right?
It is like DMT. DMT.
MDMA?
DMT is a very different drug. DMT itself, it's still a hallucinogen. It's in the hallucinogen family.
Yeah, the pineal gland. Pineal gland.
It lasts 15 minutes.
It's the same trip, but in very different ways. So Everyone who I've met that has done it, I've talked to maybe 6 people now, and all they tell me is that it's kind of like a voice coming into your head telling you to follow them and to, you know, just to open.
That's kind of what I experience,
up.
You know?
Right. Yeah. To open yourself up and to kind of just let it guide you, but everyone has told me that it's in different forms. Some people have a snake, others have a woman, others have an eye, others just see a black dot in a white, you know, scenery. It's different forms of it, but it's the same trip. Everyone comes to the same mindset at the end of the day. It's not like ayahuasca or things where everyone has their own trip and everyone experiences something completely different.
See, that's interesting because I've heard some things about people who go on these retreats and take ayahuasca. And they'll kind of separate these groups of however many, and then they'll journal, come back, and turns out they all saw the same thing without any external influence because they were all separated.
It could be the environment in which they were in.
I mean, do you think when you take these hallucinogenics, do you think it's like another parallel? Maybe it's like something that we can't see, you know, with the naked eye, you know, naturally?
As in, like, you enter a parallel universe or like a... almost like a different realm of an energy, you mean?
Who knows, man? I'm just curious.
I think that acid and magic mushrooms and other hallucinogens do is they open up, like you said, like another, not another world. It's the same world we live in, but it opens
happening
up.
Happening at the same time?
It opens up a new possibility. Like acid itself does things to your brain that your brain naturally does not do. Like crosstalk, where segments of your brain that do not communicate begin to communicate with themselves.
What is the percentage? I really don't know the percentage, but recently I heard, you know, we only use a certain percentage of our brain.
I don't think any of that's true. It's proven to not be true because if you look at someone have a dream and watch the MRI scan, their entire brain lights up like a firework.
I looked into that. I read a little bit about that. So technically you use your full brain, but you're not using it to its full potential. So you use 100% capacity of your brain.
But we can't retain that information. You know, like when you're using your brain, when you're sleeping, wherever you go, and you wake up, like, how often can you remember all those hours that were spent asleep?
I think that would depend on, like, the coherence between each side of your brain. Because that plays a part into it. I actually was reading a lot about it pretty recently. So it's like, you got to create coherence between the two sides of your brain in order for you to even somehow remotely have subconscious control over your brain and over your dreams. Because 80% of your mind is a subconscious mind.
Yeah, yeah.
So once you create that coherence, you kind of have somewhat control over your subconscious mind, even though you wouldn't know.
It's kind of like people who know how to lucid dream.
Mm-hmm.
They sort
see, I've heard about this.
Into this position where they can say, like, I know what I want to dream of, I know what I want to experience, and I'm going to do it. You know, they kind of leave their mind as they're falling asleep. They kind of, you know, prepare their mind to be like, okay, we're going to be in this location, we're going to be surrounded by these people, we're going to be doing this and that. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of that, they can say, you know what, like, this isn't what I want to switch. And they can just completely,
I looked into it, you know.
I
met this girl late last year. I forget her name. I know her name. I'm not going to put her on blast. Things didn't work out, but anyway, she was this French girl.
Oh, okay.
And I met her and, you know, sweet girl. Her father was a doctor in France, and they were building a cosmetic company here in the United States. And the cosmetic company was all natural, whether it was hand soap, shampoo, conditioner, tea tree oil, you know, it was just all natural. No sulfates or anything like that. But she said that her father was doing research in France. There's like a disease that horses get. I forget what it's called. But anyway, he like found a way to astral project, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And he cured this disease with a horse. And I guess he was associated with the president of France. And she was telling me this. She was like, you don't have to believe me. I was like, this is crazy. Like, who did this happen to? You know what I mean? And so she's talking to me about this, and she was like, yeah, so my father, he's still in France. He's still trying to do some research. And he's good friends with the president, whoever that is, of France. And the president said, don't tell anybody or they'll kill you. Now, why is it that, I mean, there's a bit of a pattern here with people who do acid or shrooms, or, you know, let's talk about Silicon Valley. We'll put, like, let's say Steve Jobs, for example, or other people who have created things that are just way beyond, you know, just kind of outside the box, but, you know.
Hunter S. Thompson. Sorry, everybody, that's my boy, fanboy over, man. That motherfucker.
But why is it that we crave so much and it seems like no one really is giving us the information, like the Pentagon releasing the information about the UFOs twice this year?
You know,
amidst what kind of crisis? Like, would you pay attention to anything I release about a UFO if you have to worry about your well-being and your family's well-being right now?
See, that's the thing. If let's say, hypothetically speaking, which I don't want it to be a hypothetical, I want to hang out with an alien so bad, man. I mean, come on, it'd be dope. But, you know, if they were to come out and say, yeah, aliens walk amongst us, I feel like it would question religion. I know you're an atheist.
I'm cool with them questioning religion.
I am too. I think it should evolve, but it would question religion, security, government, democracy, almost everything.
It would definitely question everything.
But I also
want to know, you know, one of my first questions would be, if we already know that there is aliens walking amongst us, per se, you know?
Hey, hand him your mic a little bit. You might have to hold it in between you. I want to get this. Oh. All
right. So, for example, let's say they do say there are aliens walking amongst us and whatnot. My first question will be, so we already know that there is aliens walking amongst us, but yet you guys are feeding us little crumbs of info in terms of education, ways of life, advancement in any sort of way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In health, medicine, all that, like, you know what I mean? If we have aliens walking amongst us, why do we still have people suffering from hunger or people dying from diarrhea? You know,
or even diabetes. Or just like things. Small things like that where I feel like, man, it's just supplying. It's just a...
Well, because unfortunately, money does run the world. And at the end of the day, like, if all this information was open to everybody, nobody would be making money. And humans, you know, we're greedy. If you have something over someone else and you're able to profit from that, that's what you're going to want to do. You're not... If you discover the cure for cancer, you're not going to post it online and save everyone.
Yeah.
If you do, great. You're a fantastic human being. And if you don't, it's understandable. You're a human. You're greedy. You want things for yourself. You want.
Yeah, but imagine if we were to get to a point as a collective. Imagine if there was no more currency, no more economy, or if there was, it wouldn't be the way it is.
I was actually talking about that the other day, too.
Did you hear about what Akon's doing?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
So Akon, he found a way to get some big investors. I think it's like $7 billion or something. And
it was big, like $1 billion money to build.
And he's building a city called Akon City, and they're going to be working with cryptocurrency.
Akon. They're going to call it the Akon.
Cryptocurrency. It's going to be like a planet inside another planet, another world inside another world. I think that's interesting. I don't know. I like to talk about these things because there's just so much going on right now, you know, like with the virus, and, you know, there are some people who don't think it's real, but I also don't think that the media portrayed it correctly. Kind of scared the shit out of everybody.
Definitely.
You know, especially, you know, like, for example, like my, you know, my parents, they're kind of old. And so, and they're also, I'm not even going to get political, but, you know, affected them in a way where it affected their life, you know. Like, when it hit for me, I was still trying to go out and be productive, but I was also taking precaution. It just didn't feel real. And you know, with all these things happening, it just seems like people are starting to wake up and question. And I can't watch the news, man. I can't. I like to be informed, but like I said, it's like if I watch the news, I'm informed. But if I watch the wrong news, I'm misinformed. It's like I'm looking for what's right. you know.
The problem with that is that reporting hasn't been what it was 20, 30, 50 years ago with my baby Hunter S. Thompson. They'll be straight up with you guys. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you his shit wasn't biased. His shit was so biased, it wasn't even funny. But he didn't cut corners. He told you how it was 110% the way.
But even Hunter, it was based off of his perspective. So how can you trust
his perspective?
Someone, you know?
Exactly.
That's where you and I got into a little argument about the other day.
The perspective of his was not one that you should take 100%.
I mean, it's not like he was doing crack in the back and then, you know, giving philosophical speeches. I mean, you obviously wouldn't. You know what I mean? I mean, was he though?
He kind of was.
Was he though?
He did a fuck ton of cocaine.
He made Pablo
Escobar and Scarface look like they were college little high school boys. You know that motherfucker? He talked about driving from, I think it was from California to Colorado with an 8-ball in his trunk. Like,
sounds about right.
Yeah, speedball too, which is heroin and cut with cocaine. Like, he was an animal, an absolute animal.
So,
but I feel like that in itself gave him the edge to, like, he questioned Nixon to the highest key. Nixon was his number one enemy. And Jimmy Carter, he's the reason Jimmy Carter won election. After the fact, he hated Jimmy Carter. And he hated that man. Hunter S. Thompson looked at the world and knew it was fucked up. And instead of trying to fix it for the better, he merely tried to expose it. So that everyone could see the wounds in which we carry. Not trying to medicate the wounds. He didn't care.
Do you think
about
the people who try to expose it, they're immediately targeted? I mean, you've heard about the 27 Club. You've heard about the Freemasons.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I think Hunter S. Thompson was murdered. If you read into how he was killed, he supposedly had committed suicide by gunshot. His son was in the other room and didn't hear a word. Didn't hear a sound. All he heard was a clank. Like a clink. Sound of something hitting a toaster. And then they found a Beretta next to him. I think it was a Beretta. But the thing is that that's impossible.
The Beretta, like,
it's a pistol.
Yeah. I mean, it's like this long, right?
Yeah, it's not even that. There should have been a sound from that gunshot. But there was not one. Are you going to commit suicide with a suppressor and then take off the suppressor?
That's what I was thinking.
How are you going to take off a suppressor when you shot yourself in the face? So, I mean,
see, there's a lot of that. When people try to expose it, I know the NSA is watching this and listening to this.
Oh, yeah. Y'all can suck my balls.
It's true, though. For real, though. You know, because I mentioned some things, you know, and it's definitely a thing. But no disrespect, guys. So don't kill us, you know. But, yeah, with your diary, your journal, you talked about your experience with narcotics. And would you say that it was experimental? Or would you say that it was, you trying to cope with whatever was going on in your life? And what do you have to say for the people out there who are, you know, struggling or whatever, or maybe they're interested in being experimental?
So I started smoking weed when I was about 14, 15 years old. From there, it was probably like a 6 to a year thing. I smoked for probably a year, jumped on the pills.
Sorry. Why? Like, what kind of? You mentioned opioids.
Opioids. I actually started with these little yellow. That's the fucked up part.
Yeah.
No one do what I'm about to talk about. There was this girl named, you know what? Fuck that bitch. Named Lee. All right. And this girl would literally give me pills.
Lee.
I would wake up, go to class in the morning. I'd be like, hey, yo, what's up, Lee? She would whip out this little tin box.
Altoid box?
No. Like a little tin box, like what they used to put cocaine back in the 40s.
Shit.
And then take out two little yellow pills. One for me and one for her. And we'd pop them. They made me feel funny. I still, to this day, don't know what those pills are. And you know what's crazy? I could have had an allergic reaction or something crazy could have happened where I could have died.
Oh, definitely. You're here.
So that happened. That's how that started. Around that same time, my sister had been prescribed several different types of prescription drugs for ADHD. Mm-hmm. And my father had recently gone through surgery and been given a certain amount of painkillers. I now was in the process of starting to experiment with these drugs.
Did it become like I could make some money off this? Or
no,
were you genuinely interested?
The money thing came years later when I decided to sell Xanax out of my high school.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, became addicted to Xanax. I would buy 200 Xanax for $200. I would end up taking 20 by the end of the week.
Jesus.
Like, it was a lot. Like, there's my whole 11th grade year is incomplete. Like, I don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I still have no recollection of that year to this day. I don't know what happened my 11th grade year. It's all a haze of basketball games and of me popping pills and selling pills. That's all it is. Me going into the bathroom, crushing up some Xannies and putting them in my nose. Because that's another thing. I only popped for the first 2 weeks, or the first week. After that, I started chewing them. When that didn't feel like it was working good enough, I just started snorting pills like a goddamn vacuum cleaner. I would crush up.
Thank God you changed, though, you know?
Yeah, I changed.
You had the experience, and, you know, that's why we're here.
I'll be honest. I'm going to say this story. I had sold Xanax for a long time, and this woman came to me, and she asked for a large quantity of Xanax, and, you know, a provider is going to provide the drugs in which they are needed.
Right.
So I provided the Xanax. I had left her house and continued walking down the park. When I came back, it was about another hour and a half later. Her whole street was lined with ambulances, police officers, and she was being carried away in a plastic bag. The police had put a paper in a plastic bag as well and zipped it up. And from what I could have gathered, she committed suicide, and that was her... She had committed suicide and with the pills I had provided her with. On my way home, I threw out the pills at the bridge, and since then I made a promise never to sell Xanax again. It was I learned that it was not a good drug.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in Miami, so I was around people who did a lot of questionable things. I've slept at a person's house, and at 3 a.m, a crackhead's knocking at the door asking for a fix. In the middle of a fucking condo.
I mean, what do you think when these sort of things happen to you? I mean, obviously, it probably, you know, became normal because it was happening more often.
Wake up in the day and tell myself, I'm going to do something illegal today. And I knew I was going to do something illegal today. I knew. Whether it was shooting a gun in a residential area for fun or building bombs for fun. You know, FBI, don't come after me, okay? They were all in fun and games.
This is 16. The past.
This was... Y'all can't get me now. It's been 5 years. Yeah. Statutes of limitations have been exceeded. And, you know, all the crazy shit I would do, I just knew it was going to happen. Would I go ahead and make a phone call? Hey, yo, let's build bombs. No, I would just walk down the street and a friend would hit and see me and be like, hey, yo, you want to come with us? Yeah, fine. Let's go do whatever the fuck we're going to go do. And whatever that was is what happened.
What made you want to change? Go back to school, do what you're doing, write, read.
Well, the drug thing changed in high school when all that happened. And I slowly began to realize that I was losing myself. And so I quit. I took some acid and I meditated. And my own brain and I had a meeting of sorts in which we talked about my use of drugs. And my brain and I both came to the conclusion that the only drugs one should take are the drugs that doesn't kill your soul. Xanax kills your soul. It's like walking around school when I sold those Xanax. It was like being surrounded by zombies. Everyone had tombstones.
You felt like a different level?
They were all just dead inside. Like, after taking those drugs, they just looked so dead inside. It just... It made you feel alone. You kind of realize that you're their maker now. Like, you played God. You could kill these people if you fuck up or if you just want to. And it kind of scared me because it's a power that no one deserves. No one deserves that power.
But everyone kind of low-key has power, in a way.
Or has. Either has it or wants it.
Or you can acquire it pretty easily.
Or you can acquire it. But it's a power that one should never be allowed to have.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's a power that is not worthy to anybody. And if someone comes and says that's a power that belongs to God, there is no God. It's a power that belongs to time.
Let's remain unbiased, all right? We probably do have some Jesus lovers out there. And
it's all right. Sorry God bless about you. That. It's something that's based on time.
Yeah.
Whether you die tomorrow or 80 years from now.
Yeah.
It's not something that you have. Well, that's funny because saying that, I honestly do want to die when I say I want to die.
Like premeditated.
Yeah. Like I
feel that.
If I'm like, yo, I'm gonna live to 45. After 45, I'm punching that ticket. Then I guess at 45, I punch that ticket.
See, you know, it's kind of like going out on the water and surfing. Because for such a long time, I was so scared of sharks. Because I saw Jaws at like 6, dude. It really messed me up.
real fact.
No, for real, though.
You ever watch Eight-Legged Freaks? The spider movie?
Dude,
That's why I have arachnophobia. Ask my girlfriend.
Oh, for real?
I won't get... Like, if I'm driving and a spider comes down, I'll tell the passenger, yo, kill it, or I'm killing all of us.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt, man. But, you know, like, it's like you get to a point where you're kind of more accepting, and it's like for me when I go out on the water now, it's like if I get bit by a shark, I get bit by a shark, and if I die, I die. But if I survive, then it'll be one hell of a story, you know. Get on the podcast, like, hey guys, sorry it took me 3 months to get back, but I was bit in the neck by a fucking great white, you know.
Took that bitch out with my bare hands.
I survived. I survived, guys. You know.
That's how I got this new wallet.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, death is an interesting topic, and you know, I don't know if I'm gonna be an old man or what, but I'd like to see, you know, what the world ends up doing. You know, like 5 years ago, I read an article. I like Popular Science. It's a really cool like website.
I go on there, yeah.
And
there are science news.
Yeah, yeah, I like science news. But they were, at that time, it was probably, honestly, it was probably about 7 years ago, but I was in a business management class, and I would finish my work early, and so I would go on Popular Science, and they just had, like, so many interesting articles, whether it was about an ant with a disease that would climb to the top instinctively, it would climb to the top of a tree, and it would just infect everyone below it.
It was the zombie fungus.
The zombie fungus, like, yes. Some real stuff.
I've studied that. I thought it was really cool.
And anyway, so... there was one article and it was talking about how there was this asteroid and it was gonna, you know, it was gonna hit Earth, and by like 2040, you know, the trajectory would hit Earth by 2040. But by then we'd have the technology to figure it out. Well, I tell my friends at the time and they're like, "No way, you know, how is that possible?" I try to find the article. It's taken down. It's taken down, and like a year or two pass, and I look into it. It was edited and republished, saying that it wasn't going to hit us. Now, if you knew that we were going to die, all of us, by 2040, I mean, we'd all be living on the edge. We'd all be living every day like as if it were our last. You know, hey, man, we only have 33 years left. You know, what do you want to do, you know?
I feel like that could be the case. But one of the good things about science news and all those science-related outlets for news is that they are extremely peer-reviewed. That's why I don't read Fox News. I don't read CNN. I don't read BBC. I don't read any of that shit.
The BBC radio.
Yeah, I don't read any of that crap. I'd much rather read science news and not bother myself with some petty politics that has no place in science. Mm-hmm. Climate change shouldn't be political.
Yeah.
See, I hear your point on that, but like my question on that is, fair, right? Science news would still to have, like, put that green light closer. Science news technically still has to, like, abide by the same guidelines in order to publish a story as CNN would, or as any other news outlet would, don't you guys think? Because there is some sort of, like,
truth behind it.
Organization or something that keeps all those news outlets in check. There has to be some sort of like requirements or guidelines they have to follow in order to publish any type of story.
Yeah. Well, they filter the information. Right. They filter the information.
So, like, going back to what you said about the asteroid that was going to hit us, why was it taken down and re-edited and put back? Like,
it sounds crazy, but it's for real.
Right, and like, it's also another thing we humans tend to have is like not worry about a problem until it shows up. But most of the time, when a problem shows up, it's a little too late.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's also their way of, like, not controlling our fear, but kind of... manipulating our fears into thinking, like, are we really going to die or are we not? Or, like, is this really happening or is it not happening, you know? So they have that power to, like, manipulate what we think and how, you know, we view things and stuff like that. Like, the media, you know? Like,
just to keep it as a statistic.
This is why you date a very smart girlfriend.
There you go. Well, guys, we're at 53 minutes. I assume we'll be doing more podcasts in here, you know, in the near future. And I'm going to interview you. I mean, you all got really great, you know, really great minds, and I'd like to pick them if I can. But thank you. Thank you for being here. This is the Goobs Podcast, a podcast where we talk just to talk.
Can I end it with a quote?
Hit me.
All right, I got you.
Oh, it's my boy.
No sympathy for the devil. Keep that in mind. Buy the ticket, take the ride. And if it occasionally gets a little heavier than what you had in mind, well, maybe chalk it up to force consciousness expansion. Tune in, freak out, and get beaten. Hunter S. Thompson.
Wow.
Carry that in my wallet.
Well, there you go, guys. Try to dissect that if you can. I'm going to need him to explain it because I didn't understand a fucking word. But Until next time, guys, be safe, be easy, stay positive. I know times are difficult, but we'll get through it. All right, peace.